Those who were present this morning in the meditation hour, I just explained what is meant by meditation. The meditation in two words is to direct your attention, which is the outward expression of soul, from all outside and from all the body below, take it to the seat of the soul in the body, which is at the back of the eyes. Just the process of death. Man, when dying, he does not recognize anybody. His attention is withdrawn from outside. And further, the lower body is benumbed and the attention is upward until the eyes are upward, to the back of the eyes. So that was practical, sitting was given, and most of you people did know that you are not the body, and you also did open the inner eye, single eye, to see one phase of God into expression, which is light. God is light. The symbols of which we use in our meditations, in our temples, in our outer ways of worship. Now, each kernel has its own casing. This attention was the outward expression of the soul, which is at the feet at the back of the eyes. So it was a casing which you are carrying. This is called man's body. So God made man, this outer casing, with equal privileges. All born the same way, all have got the outer form the same, two eyes, two hands, two ears, mouth, inner constitution also the same. So man has got heart, lungs, stomach. Every day morning, municipality takes out the filth of the body. No high, no low. So you'll find, so man has three aspects. It has the physical body, it has intellect, and it is conscious entity. Physically, we advance wonderfully. We know how the body is made, how it can be kept fit, how the disease arises, how those can be remedied. We have got so many patches for that. Ayurvedic is the oldest. Yunani system comes next, then allopathy, naturopathy, homeopathy. There are so many systems which help us to keep our body fit. We have got intellect, we have dwelt also intellectually wonderfully. That is before you all. We can go around the world in hours. We have reached the moon and other planets we are trying. We can hear from thousands of miles through the radio. We can also see through television, through speaking. So with all these intellectual advancements and the physical advancements, we are not happy. The reason why we have known little or practically nothing about our own self, which is conscious entity, the outward expression of which is attention, as I explained to you this morning. So masters come, they say, God is spirit. and the Spirit of God is in man. So, what is spirituality? That I have to put before you now. Spirituality is knowing oneself and knowing God. Man body is a wonderful house we live in which there are so many apertures. With all these apertures open, we cannot run away out of it. Body works so long as we are in the body, and we are in the body controlled by some power which keeps us in the body. So man body is considered to be the highest in all creation, next to God. Angels were asked to bow down before the man body when it was bent. So we are drops of the ocean of all consciousness, but with all that we also have the same essence as that of God, and that God whom we can have to meet is also within this man body. With so much privilege, we are not happy. The reason why? Our soul, the outward expression of which is identified with the body, outgoing faculties and enjoyment. So much so that we have forgotten our soul. Body is made of matter, and world is also made of matter. Soul is eternal, but the body which is wearing, which is working, is changing. Every moment of life, and the world outside also is changing at the same speed at which our body is changing. As we are identified with the body and with the world outside, this all appears to be stationary, which is optical illusion. If you like to bring home this point, take example of a boat in which human are rowing down the stream. Boat is rowing down the stream, the speed of the water and the speed of the boat is the same. And those who are sitting in the body, they are also flowing at the same route. They enjoy it. They look to the water, it appears to be stationary, and boat also stationary. If for a while they look to the shore of the river, oh, sir, we are going down the stream. So this illusion, optical illusion, we have to come out of that. Only we will see the world in its right perspective. World is changing. Those who came, kings are the who are happy or the unhappy, all who came to the body, they after all left the body. But under great illusion, when they came to know at the time of death that now we are leaving the body. This body is the first companion that we have with us when entering the world. But when we go, this body does not accompany us. And all those things which have come in our connection, how can they go? Those who buy, they are out of this illusion, they tell us the world passing, time and tide waits for no man. The day is arriving when you will have to leave the body. So we have been identified with the world outside so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. Now the only remedy is we should know how to leave the body at will. To masters who solve the mystery of life, they said, gave out, "Man, know thyself, who you are, what you are. You are not the body, you are having the body. You are not the intellect, but you have the intellect. You are not the outgoing faculty, but you have them for you. And you are conscious entity, conscious being. How to know that? How to come out of this grand illusion?" For that this morning was submitted to you how the soul, the outward expression is attention, can be withdrawn from outside and take up about the body consciousness, and you could have found there that you are not the body. And further peep, you add into the beyond, and most of you did see light of God, on the lower scale of course. So how to come out of this delusion is by self-analysis, not by feelings or emotions or drawing inferences. They are all subject to error. Seeing is above all. So all this what it appears to be is all illusory. It is changing like anything. And we come to know about it when we really rise above body consciousness. So this is what men have, you see. Then what is spirituality? I have just placed before you. Spirituality, God is spirit, and spirit of God is man. God is all consciousness, and we are drafts of the ocean of that consciousness, environed by mind and matter. As I submitted just now, our soul is under the control of mind. Mind is under the control of outgoing faculties, and outgoing faculties are dragged like anything but the outer enjoyments. We identified with it, we cannot differentiate. In theory we might, intellectually we might infer. Really we cannot see it this right perspective unless we ourselves rise above body consciousness. The demonstration of which was given to you at the time. So spirituality is knowing who you are, what you are. What is your connection with the body? How long will it continue? After all, each man has to leave the body. Now what be our fate beyond? So this rising of our body consciousness, withdrawing our attention from outside and from the body below, rise up to come in contact with the Spirit of God, God into expression power, this is truly means spirituality. So spirituality is no spiritism. Spiritism to be in contact with the lower groveling spirits which are left body. And it is no spiritualism. It is only come in contact with those souls who go a bit higher in the other world. You contact them through planets and other things to get their messages. But they cannot give you messages more than they have attained already. They are no wiser than when they left your body. So that is not spirituality. And hypnotism also knows no spirituality. And mesmerism also, the people think the other way. So spirituality means self-analysis practically. A way out from the physical body into the beyond. How to do it? How can we separate our body from the entanglements of the outgoing faculties and attachments of the outer of the world and the body below? This is, strictly speaking, spirituality. Now, I am coming to the case inside. Man has got body, physical body. Masters who came, they solved, they analyzed the man body, what it is composed of. Ultimately they come to know what is that driving force which is carrying along the body. And that we are. We are controlling the faculty of the man body with the different departments of seeing, hearing, taste, smell and touch. So it is we on account of us that this body is working. When we withdraw, the body remains intact as it is, whole machine intact, but the driver is gone. And there is one thing more. We are also controlling the body. We cannot leave the body, although there are so many holes open. So masters come to give us a demonstration as to how to rise above body consciousness. And this process of leaving the physical body, rising to the beyond, coming in contact with that all-controlling power is, strictly speaking, spirituality, what is called. So God, let us come out to the outer casing of it. God made man, as I told you, with the same privilege from God, no high, no low. And the masters who solved the mystery of life, whosoever met them, they were also succeeded in solving the mystery of himself. To know themselves, it is the first step. All masters, whether they came in the East or the West, all said so. Greek philosophers told the same thing in their Greek language. Gnothi Theoton. Latin philosophers get in Latin, Gnothi Tipton. Persian philosophers also said in Persian language, of course, the ultimate goal of all knowledge is to know God. And to know God, who can know God? God cannot be known by the outgoing faculty, mind or intellect. So, it is our own self, which is conscious entity, when it is liberated from the entanglements of mind and outgoing faculties by rising above it, only then we can know the old self which is controlling us in the body. Like knows the like. So when the master left the scene to keep their teachings alive, these religions, social bodies, what they are, came into existence. The purpose was very noble, that most of the people may derive benefit by joining those schools of thought. The labels of which we are now carrying. You see, as man, we are man. Later on, whatever labels we are carrying on the body, we are called by that. Some Hindus, some Mohammedans, some Christians, some Sikhs, some Jews, like that. If you look to a small child who is 2-3 years old, not more than that, if you ask him who you are, he opens his eyes, opens his mouth, he feels something conscious here. As he grows old, outer impressions find he has. Then he says, who you are? He says, I am Mr. John, I am Mr. Khan, I am Mr. Singh, I am such and such. When more further impressions come into self, then he says, I am a Christian, I am a Hindu, I am a Mohammedan, you see. I am an Indian, I am a Russian, I am American. Just see how far he has receded from the consciousness which a little child has. So it is the consciousness that we are. We are conscious entities. And that to be withdrawn from all outside and know ourselves so that we can run the machinery of the man body in outside, outside world whenever we like. If not, we can withdraw from there. So such men, their bodies appear to be in the world, but their souls are in mouthpiece of God, contact with God. Their bodies appear to be entangled in the worldly affairs day and night, but whenever they want, they rise above body consciousness and travel into the beyond. That's the difference. As I told you this morning, with the average man and the one who has succeeded that way is vast difference. We are at the mercy of the organ faculties and enjoyments. We are dragged like anything, whether we wish it or not. But one who has, with the grace of some adapted body, he has given him a demonstration as to how to rise above body consciousness, he rises above the outgoing faculty. The seat of the soul is at the back of the eyes. And all outgoing faculties have their place below, ears, eyes, nose, down. These 5 decades, lust, anger, greed, taste and touch, they have got their centers to work. Lust attacks from the eyes, through the eyes. Anger has a boost when you hear. Taste through the tongue and smell through the nose. So these, those who are just competent to have their feet there at the back of the body, at the back of the eyes, he is competent to use any of in fact at his will and pleasure. So this is what the difference between the average man and the other man. So religions, I told you, that were raised with a very noble purpose so that many people may derive benefit from their form, by joining it. So long as they are practical people, people derive the full benefit of that. For want of them, the same formations raised with noble purpose stagnated. Further deterioration came up. Masters, they come from time to time when they see this plight of the world, they say, dear children, know thyself, who you are. Again they revive that very truth, which is the basic teaching of all masters, and they bring home these things to them. Now soul, as I told you, is of the same essence as that of God. God is all consciousness and soul is conscious entity. So physically, you see, we are all one, with equal privilege from God. As soul, we are also of the same essence as that of God. We are all children of God, We are all brothers and sisters in God. And the power that we worship as God by so many names, is the same which is controlling all universe and controlling us in the body too. So as man, as soul, as whom we worship, we are all already one. The unity exists, but we have forgotten. There are thousand Lebanese people praying God, bearing different labels on the man body. But to whom they bow down? To God, who is the controlling power of all creation. First they have to know themselves. So like archers, you see, there are many archers, but the point target is the same always. Whether you have the outer labels of one religion or the other that show in which school, particular school of thought you are taken up to solve the mystery of life. This is basic teachings given by all masters in their own language, of course. That school is better, is appreciated, from which many students come out successful. Not that whose buildings are very grand, whose playing grounds are very beautiful, whose dresses and students are very magnificent, but where from many turn out get highest degree. So as I told you, all this plight came up for want of practical people. So masters always tell us what they bring us. They say first of all that they are the maker of all this universe. He also made your body in the womb of the mother. So, Master said the same thing. They say, love God and all those whom God has created. So all scriptures, when you see, look through them, they enjoin this thing. God is love, and love is God. Tenth Guru says, hear ye all, lend me your ears, I tell you the truth. Whether you bear the labels of one school or the other, the way back to God is also through love. God is love, and love is innate in our souls. Now, instead of that love being had a boost by coming in contact with all love, which is controlling us in the body, that being attached to the outside things, which is termed attachment. Love knows giving, and attachment means squeezing, dragging something, usurping something for one's own self. Vast difference between the two. So they bring the religion of love. Kabir asks all masters, I say, Kabir says, well, love thy man body is the only golden opportunity in which you can love God. How? When you are brought in contact with God, which is controlling you in the body. The outer expression of which is light and sound. So if someone we have got love for the world, which is called attachment, that's the reason we go where we are most attached. In man body, we could have contacted God within us, which is all love. Had that become the ruling passion, then naturally after that we would have gone to the lap of the Father. the reason of our coming again and again, ever since we were separated from God, we have not yet been successful to go back to our home. So all masters tell us like that. All those who are on the spiritual way, St. Paul said, what you should serve one another with love. Relations, one who serves his fellow men, he is the true lover of God. So one and all, you see, Taylor says, he, in his poem, he prays best who loves best.
Good morning. Welcome to the satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was the first 30 minutes of the talk titled True Spirituality. This was given by Master on 8 October 1972 in New York. Our reader this morning is Michael Brown. Hi, Michael.
Oh, good morning, Pradeep, and good morning to everyone else. Today I'll continue reading from Master's book, The Mystery of Death, beginning where I left off last time I read on page 108 of chapter 5. This is the final chapter of this book. And up to now in this chapter he covers the seven subplanes that our souls will pass through after death. And the previous reading I did was the first six, and this one we'll talk about the seventh and final. In the loftiest subplane come the souls of the masters of Brahma Vidya and their initiates, Brahmacharis. For none but an initiate can find the straight gate and the narrow path that leadeth unto life. And so the chosen few enter into the land and life of Brahman. They enjoy their self-consciousness to the highest point, but are not yet endowed with cosmic consciousness. In the end, Mrs. Annie Besant sums up the position thus. Such is an outline of the seven heavens, into one or the other of which men pass in due time after the change that men call death. For death is only a change that gives the soul a partial liberation, releasing him from the heaviest of his chains. It is but a birth into a wider life, a return after brief exile on earth to the soul's true home, home of the universal mind, passing from a prison into the freedom of the upper air. Death is the greatest of earth's illusion. There is no death, only changes in life conditions. Life is continuous, unbroken, unbreakable, unborn, eternal, ancient, and constant. It perishes not with the perishing of the bodies that clothe it. We might as well think that the sky is falling when a pot is broken as imagine that the soul perishes when the body falls to pieces. The run of mankind after death finds no rest in the three worlds, the physical, the astral, and the mental. The souls freed from the physical vesture are carried on, up and down, in the giant Brahmanic wheel of life by the momentum of their own thoughts, words, and deeds. It is all a play of the individual mind with its vast field of ramifications spreading out from the lowest, the physical, to the mental worlds, wherein one builds his own tabernacles in the hereafter. For a temporary stay, long or short, according to one's needs for learning the lessons of Brahman, as he advances on the path towards perfection. And each soul gathers as rich a harvest as he can before exhausting the causes set in motion through the external stimuli from powers that be in his surroundings in the various planes in the three worlds thus described. The causal, or the seed body of the human soul, the innermost vest, has yet two more very subtle and sublime linings underneath respectively, called the buddhic and nirvanic. It is only a brave soul, very brave indeed, like that of Prince Siddhartha, who may enter into Buddhahood and become the Buddha, the enlightened one, and enjoy the bliss of the creator of the three universes, and comes to the earth plane to give the law of Dhamma or Dharma, unto the world, with emphasis on desirelessness, so as to free the mind of all attachments, and then to tread the eightfold path of righteousness leading to perfection. Again, it may be a Jain Tirthankara, the Mahavira, the bravest of the brave, who could dare approach the divine throne of Brahman and give out to the world the law of universal love and ahimsa, love for all creatures, from the tiniest insect helplessly crawling in the dust and the water and air spirits floating in countless numbers in their respective spheres, invisible to the naked eye. In the Buddhic plane, one develops the intellectual side of divinity in him and begins to see and realize the self-same self in him as in all around him, and he is as much in that self as others are. Thus he comes to the great fundamental unity of existence, the Sutra Atma, carrying everything from an ant to the elephant as so many beads on the string of a rosary, in spite of the differences in shape, size, and color, both within and without, due to climatic conditions and mental makeup and inner development and growth. Now, the human monad, the outbreathed life of Brahman, dwells in the inbreathed life of Brahman with divine powers and attributes, and aspires for the bliss aspect of the divinity in him, the Atmic or the Nirvanic consciousness of Sit Chit Anand, the heart and soul of the universe, which now become his, and he is one with it. It is indeed a long and weary process to understand correctly the Brahmavidya, and then to successfully practice it, and to traverse the Brahman from end to end, stage by stage, from the physical world of coarse matter to Brahm Lok proper, the region where Mahamaya in its finest and most subtle form reigns. The Brahman is the manifestation of the power of God, lodged in Om, the most sacred syllable in the Vedic lore. Hence it is the Akar, or form of Om, Omkar. It is the Logos of the Greeks and Ek-Ankar of the various scriptures. This is the ultimate end of human attainment, says Vedanta, the highest teachings as given by the later Vedic teachers and scholars, the rishis of old. As a result of their intense meditative experiences in the snow-capped mountain fastness or in thick forest dwellings, Brahman is the very life of the universe, comprising as it does the three worlds described above, with all that exists in each, the Triloki Nath, the Lord of the threefold panoramic life in its fullness. Their words of wisdom we find in aphoristic forms as gems of purest rays serene in their valuable treatises known as the Upanishads, which are rightly considered as Vedantas, or the final rungs or parts of the Veda, the efflorescence of divine wisdom, which ends with Mahavakya, the great truth, that thou art, meaning that man is Brahman in his real nature and essence. And when one realizes this fundamental truth, he involuntarily proclaims, Aham Brahm Asmi, or I am Brahman, or I and my Father are one, for I speak nothing on my own but as my Father bids me do. The greatest lesson that one derives from Vedanta is we are all one, one in our origin, one in our makeup, both inner and outer formation, one in our potentialities and powers, however latent and involved they may be, equally capable of developing the same, maybe sooner or later, the process of development or unfoldment of the self is essentially the same for all. And then the goal, too, is one for all mankind, for all of us are worshippers of Brahman. In this way, the outbreed life, constituting as it does, the individual mind merges in the inbreed life of the universal mind, or Mahat, the great mind of the cosmos, the third logos, or the divine creative intelligence, the Brahma of the Hindus, the Manjusri of the Buddhists, the Holy Spirit of the Christians, and Allahu of the mystics and Sufi dervishes. Here, in Brahmlok, souls live for long and in close proximity to Brahman, imbibing the love, the intelligence, and the bliss of that being or power. And again, so long indeed is the stay that one is prone to believe and call it a veritable salvation, the flame merging in the flame of Brahman. But the stay there, however long it may be, is not eternal, and it only lasts until the Brahman itself dissolves and the universal mind rolls up its life, absorbing all the souls in its folds wherever they may be. This drama of infolding and unfolding of life called Brahman is repeated again and again, and the grand play continually goes on in and through eternity. The divine philosophy deals with it so beautifully. How charming is divine philosophy! Not harsh and crabbed as dull fools suppose, but musical as is Apollo's lute and a perpetual feast of nectar's sweet. It is from Brahman that there spring the three great powers, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, creating, sustaining, and dissolving all that is of the matter or Maya in one form or another. These three offsprings or powers come into being by his Shakti or Mahamaya, called the Mother of Universe, not in the sense of sex, as we ordinarily know it to be, but once again we have to take the simile of the spider's light, filmy substance that comes out not from without, but from within the spider's body, or the cocoon, or a silky case, as it is spun by a larvae from fine threads of its own making, to protect itself as a chrysalis, especially as a silkworm, wherewith we, in course of time, prepare all sorts of silken garments of so many designs and colors to cover our nakedness and take delight to stunt in borrowed clothing. Nanak, speaking of the working of God's creation, also refers to the triple principle concerned with creating, sustaining, and destroying it, all working according to the will of the Supreme Being as vicegerents, only exercising delegated authority, and strange as it may seem, it is not given to them to know him, since they are but the part of the objective creation, and he, the Supreme Being, is subjective and formless. The Great Mother, conceiving, brought forth three regents, the first creating, the second sustaining, and the last destroying. What he desires, they perform. They work under his will, but great the wonder, though he watches over them, they behold him not. Hail, hail, to him alone, the primal, pure, eternal, immortal, and immutable of all ages. As to the vast and stupendous work connected with the running of the three worlds in the creation, including all sorts of hells and heavens in them, Vishnu, the second counterpart of Brahma in the great triumvirate or Trimurti, wields the power of administration. Once questioned as to how he, Vishnu, could manage such a big show and make elaborate arrangements for the innumerable souls entrusted to his care for providing all sorts of comforts and woes in the supernal and nether worlds in his domain, he just smiled and said, "Oh, I have nothing to do at all. For whosoever comes into any of my worlds, he brings with him his own load of pains and pleasures, thereby creating his own hell or heaven, both on the earthly plane and thereafter. Whatsoever each one needs in any of my realms, he arranges the same for himself. I simply look on unconcerned at the human drama, tragic or comic, or tragicomic, as the case may be, unfolding the infold in himself. Thus runs the divine machinery automatically, all on its own and by itself, but all under his will. Brahman is a great power, too great for the human mind to conceive, and of the beyond none but the saints know of and can speak with authority. Not the formally canonized saints as we know of, but saints of the status of Sant-Sat-Guru, authorized and commissioned by truth, the truth that was in the beginning, the truth that now is, and the truth that shall remain hereafter, to teach mankind and initiate such aspiring souls into the mysteries of the beyond, and beyond the beyond state, as may be right for the purpose of understanding correctly and properly the causeless cause of all the causes that operate down below, in each of the worlds, and are ready to live the life of the spirit as Jivan Mukhats, or liberated beings while yet in flesh. A Jivan Mukhat, says Nanak, is one who knows and practices the art of death in life. And when he finally quits the stage, he quits it for good, never to return again. This is what Pravidya, or the knowledge of the beyond, teaches. Apart from this, there are many categories of teachers of Brahma Vidya, which is apra in character and paves the way for the pra, and all of them teach people in the ways of Brahman, each according to his own capabilities. The prophets and the messiahs generally prophesy the coming of great events, train mankind to live a godly life, and bring to them the tidings and messages of God, Brahman. The avataras are incarnations of the various powers of Brahman, and their function is to keep the world going in a balanced and orderly manner, holding the balance of the social order aright between righteousness and unrighteousness. The yogis and yogeshwars remain within the sphere of their yogmaya, mind force, and lead their initiates up to the highest point within their yogic powers. The Brahm lock has many sublocks called puris, bhavans, tabaks, or divisions, each allotted to one or other of the powers of Brahman, like Brahma Puri, Vishnu Puri, Shiv Puri, Indra Puri, etc., to each of which the souls of the worshippers of those powers, collectively called Brahman, are irresistibly attracted and drawn in the course of time, each to his own destination, in the place to which he belongs. The ancient Greeks speak of this threefold aspect of divinity as the three sisters of the spinning wheel, one engaged in spinning the thread of life for each, the other in adorning and embellishing the thread of life, and the third in cutting the said thread of life when the allotted time comes to an end. Similarly, in the Christian theology, we have first Logos, the creative power principle in nature, the second Logos, and the third Logos, who carry on similar duties of their own. This is the famous doctrine of Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Where all philosophies of the world end, there the true religion begins. It is only after soul, the dweller in the body, sheds its dross personality, comprising as it does the three vestitures or vehicles of body, mind, and intellect, and becomes an entity in its pristine simplicity, an undivided whole, the great immortal tree, evergreen and ever fresh in its native essence, in spite of the ever-changing panorama of life around it. It can break through the magic hall of multicolored mirrors and transcend the Trigunatma egg of Brahman and escape into the beyond. One has to be born anew, like a newborn phoenix, arising out of the ashes of its own previous self, with renewed youth and vigor, so as to be able to live through the life of the spirit that lies ahead. To cross the mental world is not so easy as it may seem to the untrained in the mysteries of the beyond. It is the most elusive world, where even the Mahatmas and the Rishis, with all their learning and tapas, fail to hold on to their own ground. What is there in the vast universe which Brahman would not like to offer to those earnest souls who try to escape through his domains and reach the true home of our Father? At every step, be it in the physical world, the astral, or the mental, he tries to block the way of the aspiring souls. The great prophets and messiahs and all others have given their experiences of the fierce encounters that they have had with Satan, Mara, Ahriman, the evil spirits, asuras, demons, and their agents in countless ways, fair or foul, whereby they try to obstruct the way to win over the seekers after truth by assurances of worldly kingdoms and principalities. And if they do not succumb to these temptations, then by threats of violence, by fire, thunder, earthquakes, heaven splittings, cloudbursts, lightnings, and what have you. It is in predicaments like these that one can only stand these trials and tribulations when one has by his side his guru or murshid, for the guru power then draws and absorbs the disciple's soul into himself and takes him along the path of ringing radiance. For each soul, the Brahman stakes his all and does not yield unless he is convinced that the seeker clings to the protection of the master power, Akal, or the timeless. Do we not see, even in the material world, that the rulers and governments of one state seal their borders to prevent unauthorized immigration of their subjects and devise laws to control such outflow? Great indeed is the power of time, and none can conquer it. And yet time itself is in mortal dread of the timeless music, lest he himself may get lost in the divine harmony. We have excesses of Dharam Khan by Nanak elsewhere in these pages. After that, the great teacher goes on to describe the journey of the pilgrim soul through various regions, culminating in Sach Khand. The next two regions he respectively calls Gyan Khand, the realm of knowledge, and Saram Khand, the realm of ecstasy. In the former, the soul's horizon expands measurably, for it comprehends at once the manifold nature of all created things, with infinity of forms and phenomena, and understands the immutable laws of the workings of nature. In the latter, the soul becomes attracted by the power of the word, gets a taste of it, and insight into the real nature of things. Next comes Karm Khand, or the realm of grace. With the purification wrought by the Holy Word, soul is freed once and for all times of even the faintest, vague, and indefinite traces of the dross in the form of vasanas, and matter no longer blinds the vision, and one becomes fully conscious of Him, coming as He does face to face with the pure essence of the world, the light of life, giving birth to Brahman and all the worlds created, included therein. Finally, the soul reaching Sach Khand, the abode of truth, realizes in fullness, complete oneness and harmony according to His will. All hearts filled with God, they live beyond the reach of death and delusion, all destined to move according to His will. Such is the beauty that to describe it is to attempt the impossible. This arising of the soul into superconscious awareness is termed, as said before, life everlasting, from which there is no return. What Nanak has described above falls within the realm of Vijnana, subjective inner experience, direct and immediate, as distinct from Jna, or theoretical knowledge, which the master expounds and imparts to the disciple through a correct rendering of the scriptures. A perfect master is all the scriptures combined and something more. The scriptures, after all, are the records of the experiences of holy men who appeared from time to time to teach mankind in the ways of God. We can, no doubt, read the scriptures if we are proficient enough in the ancient and archaic original languages in which they are written. We cannot get at their true import, nor can we reasonably reconcile the apparent differences and explain the discrepancies in the scriptural texts of various religions. He who has an access to the inner fountainhead of the life and spirit of all these texts, which of course is common to all men, with his first-hand inner knowledge, makes things easily intelligible to us, all in a way simple enough both for himself and for us. In the company of a saint, it is said, God comes nearer to man, for God himself speaks through him. As we all are scripture-bound in one way or the other, the master takes full advantage of these different scriptures which come in handy to him as aids in his work of spiritual regeneration to lead different types of people all right along the line of least resistance in each case. A Murshid e Kamil is not content with imparting mere theoretical knowledge. He gives a practical demonstration of what he says, and therein lies his greatness. One who cannot grant on soul level some actual experience of what he asserts on the level of the intellect is not a master in the true sense of the word, and his words cannot carry weight and conviction. A Satguru is verily truth personified, God in the garb of man. His mission is to lead human souls to the true home of the Father, Sat, or truth, called Satchkhand, or the abode of truth, the first grand division that came into being by his will, and hence the region of pure spirit, eternal and indestructible. The path of the masters is a grand road leading from merely physical material world to the purely spiritual realm. Beyond all duality and pairings of opposites, the Satguru says, move ye in the vast sea of light substance. In your heart is your own perfection. Go on and on and on until there is not a vestige of the human left. The light substance knows no limit. His is the path not of hells and heavens, nor of toils and sorrows, but of one of flowery boulevards studded with heavenly lights and soul-stirring strains of divine harmonies. And above all, he, as an unfailing friend and an unerring guide, comes in all his glory to full radiance and accompanies the pilgrim soul into the great beyond, instructing in the life of spirit as he proceeds along, explaining the beauties and mysteries of the way, guarding against pitfalls and warning us of the sharp turns and twists that lie en route. The disciple, from the very beginning, is taught how to withdraw from the body and rise above body consciousness into higher regions. The inner man is drawn himself from his coarse bodily encasement as a hair is drawn out of butter. For it is the soul in the luciform body, to use the Neoplatonist phraseology, that rises to find the self. Mandukopanishad tells us, not grasped by the eyes, nor by speech, nor by the gods, senses, nor by austerity, nor by religious rites and rituals and ceremonies, but by serene wisdom, the pure essence doth see the partless one in meditation. So do the Western scholars say, true happiness never comes through the avenue of senses as it lies beyond the senses. Boundless joy can be ours only if we know how to rise above the senses and catch the sublime vision that comes to the pure. The divine wisdom, in short, is that once the science and art of soul, and only a theocentric saint well versed in both, can solve for us the riddle of life and death by giving us a first-hand experience of death in life, thereby demonstrating beyond the least shadow of doubt. Life is a pure flame, and we live by an invisible sun within us. What has life and death to do with light? In the image of my light, I have made you. The relativities of life and death belong to the cosmic dream. Behold your dreamless being. Creation is light and shadow both, else no picture is possible. The darkness grows luminous and the void becomes fruitful only when you will understand that you are nothing. It is only at the Mount of Transfiguration that you will get revelation and see the mingling of heaven and earth. And that concludes my reading today. I continue reading the final chapter, number 5, What After Death, ending on page 122 from Master's Book, The Mystery of Death. My next reading, I'll finish this chapter, which is also the end of the book. Thank you, dear Master, for sharing these words and wisdom with us, and thanks to all of you for listening.
Thank you, Michael, for reading The Mystery of Death for us. There were 86 of us in this morning's satsang. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
Christ said, I have come to make people see who do not see. Take heed that the light which is within you is not darkness. We are all children of light, enveloped by so many sheets. You know how to take off these sheets, you see the light is already there.